From college to the pros, America's pastime in full force 24-7 on The Long Ball with Andrew Brown.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and welcome all. You're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. Hi, folks, I'm Andrew Brown in for episode number 17. And you know what? I hope you're having a great time, ladies and gentlemen. For those who have not been aware of this show, it is a show where I take you through the world of collegiate and or professional baseball. And I do so with a lot of great guests and a lot of great fun. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. And of course, if you want to know where all the episodes are, just check the show's official Twitter page at TheLongBall1. You can also catch it on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, and more. So please check it out. Please like and share it on Twitter and like and share it on Facebook as well. Always happy when you do so. Always happy to be spreading the word. And thank you for those, by the way, who gave your thoughts and questions. I will again direct it towards Twitter. Please do so. The Twitter issues have been fixed. The account was going through something weird, so we had to kind of reset it, so to speak. Lost some things, lost some photos, lost some tweets, lost some questions. So if your question was lost, if we don't get your question answered, please let me know as soon as possible, and we'll get to it later on. So please go ahead and message me on Twitter. Give your questions, give your thoughts. I want to hear them, and of course, that way I can ask some of my guests. So once again, big shout out to the sponsors as well, and that is Tree Pans, saving trees, saving the world. Check them out at treepans.com, and of course, we have Insulites. Insulates protection you can see. Got a fun episode in store for you, ladies and gentlemen. Here we have our reoccurring segment, This Week in Baseball's Past. But the big ticket item for this episode revolves around the upcoming trade deadline, July 31st. This year, you only have one, and you got to make it count. One trade deadline, and there's a lot of things to cover in there. This time around, though, we're going to cover that, but in a team-specific scenario. I get to sit down with a fan favorite of the show, a favorite by a lot of people, Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. He will be joining the show. He's been covering the Marlins this entire season and offseason. He's been with the ins and outs of that organization. And I'm going to talk to him about what the trade deadline means to a team like Miami. Who could be the trade pieces that are removed from the Miami Marlins organization, and what does that bring them in return? I'm going to talk with Wayne McDonald about that and more, a little bit about the All-Star Game, and of course, have a lot of fun. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's dip into the show. And like I said, we got to start by going back in time. We start the show with our newest segment, This Week in Baseball's Past.
From the ground balls to grand slams, from strikeouts to perfect games, it's time to take a look back in time on This Week in Baseball's Past.
That's right, folks. It's time to dive back into baseball's past, and we do so. Unlike last week, we go just a few years in the past, not as far back. It still has a huge meaning to it, though, as we go all the way back to July 13th of 2014. Backstop Buster Posey and pitcher extraordinaire Madison Bumgarner become the first battery mates in Major League history to hit grand slams in the same game when they both go deep in a Giants 8-4 victory over the Diamondbacks. That was at AT&T Park, and Bumgarner's four-run round tripper marks only the second time that a pitcher has hit two in a season. That feat was also accomplished by Tony Clonginger, who hit both his grand slams in the same game in 1966. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, a first that will forever be etched in baseball history. July 13th, 2014.
And there you have it, folks. Another edition diving into all that is baseball history on This Week in Baseball's Past.
Hope you enjoyed that segment, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a big baseball nerd, in fact, but a big baseball history nerd. And, you know, I remember that day, not necessarily where I was, but I remember watching it that day. And that was just awe-inspiring. And when you think about it, you know, when you get to watch something that's history-making, I mean, you remember that moment. And I don't know how I didn't remember where I was. I guess too caught up in the moment, but I remember that moment. I remember feeling great about it. I'm not a fan of the San Francisco Giants. In fact, for the longest time, I was an anti-San Francisco Giant supporter. But, you know, that was something where even in that time, it made me glad for the game of baseball. It made me really happy because, again, it's always good. Even if you're not directly a part of it, you can remember that, and it just feels as though you are a part of it. So, again, a great day in baseball history back in 2014. But now we speed up to 2019, and this is being recorded on Friday, July 12th. Will be dropped later on Saturday, July 13th. Please like it, share it, have fun with it, spread the word around. It's a great time had by all. And, you know, speaking of a great time had by all, the last time that we had this individual on that I'm going to speak to next, we had a lot of listener questions, and this is a guy that brings out all kinds of great thoughts. If you're not a baseball fan, he'll turn you into a baseball fan for sure. He is the one, he is the only contributing writer to Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, baseball guru, Wayne McDonald Jr. Wayne, great to have you on again. Always a happy time. You know, you and I could talk for days, weeks, months, even years about baseball, and no matter what time of year, we can do just that. Glad to have you on. Thanks for joining the show again.
It's great to be here, Andrew, and as always, it's going to be a great conversation on baseball. There's so much for us to get into, and let's just get into it.
Well, indeed, and you know what? It's so jam-packed, and the first thing that I thought of when I was watching All-Star Week, I mean, we'll get into some of the prospects here in just a little bit, and we'll get into the Miami Marlins here in a little bit as well, but I want to take a look at the All-Star game, and I want to ask you one question first off. Now, the system now is it no longer has the meaning of home field advantage with the All-Star game. Now, there's a lot of speculation. I mean, the American League has dominated recently, 7 straight victories in the All-Star game. My question to you here being is, one, what are your feelings towards not having the All-Star game have as much meaning? And what was your take on this year's All-Star game as a whole?
I've always been a huge proponent of the All-Star game being an exhibition game that's all about fun. The moment that Commissioner Emeritus Seelig decided that this game counts and we put that pressure on it, all the fun was taken away from it. The intriguing matchups, it became very strategic, and it was almost too micromanaged for my liking. I like it when the players can go out, and I think Fox did a phenomenal job with the players wearing the earpieces. I liked it when Yelich and Bellinger were talking back and forth, and Bregman was talking. And to me, this should be a timeout. Let's have fun. Let's marvel at the extraordinary talent in the game today. Let's promote some of this extraordinary talent. They're probably not doing a good enough job. Let's have fun with it. Let's not put this pressure and onus on the game, because for me, it took the fun out of it. And I just want to sit back for a couple of days and watch Mike Trout have fun. I want to watch Christian Yelich. I want to watch Cody Bellinger. I want to watch all these great talent and really appreciate them in a way that you really can't, particularly if you live in different time zones. So I really enjoy the fun element of it. Let the kids play rather than this one counts.
Well, and you know what, Wayne? It still was an exciting game. You know, it really was fun to watch. And I think one of the things I love is every year there's so much hype about they put up how many home runs, what's the RBI count, what's this. And it seems recently as though it's a pitching matchup. And I love that. And I loved how it was kind of a rotating door. And in the past, we may have seen a starter go maybe 2-3 innings. I actually liked how you had a revolving door, get all these people in, because ultimately you got fans from all across the country going to see their team and their guys. But, man, I thought that, again, I'm with you. I thought it was really well done, and I thought it was a really good game to watch.
Yeah, and what I liked is the jocularity between the players. When Freddie Freeman gets into the batter's box, what's Justin Verlander going to do? And there's that joking back and forth. And to me, that's the great joy of it. Rather than adding this stress to a game, let the guys have fun. Let the fans have fun. Let the fans enjoy watching these extraordinarily talented ball players have fun. And let's not put pressure on them. And I think, with the exception of some schoolboy staff who's here and there, you know, I think it was very well done overall. And kudos to the city of Cleveland. From I've heard great stories and reports about them hosting, and the fact that there was a fun element to the game.
Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, joining me now as we start off here talking about the MLB All-Star Game and all the fun that's been entailed, and certainly had a lot of the All-Star Week was great. And one thing that I was interested in, and again, I'll toot my own horn here, Wayne, I predicted with the Home Run Derby that Pete Alonso would, after besting Darryl Strawberry for the, I believe, the rookie home run record as early as he's getting it. And, you know, I predicted it, tooting my own horn here, he got it. But, man, the storyline didn't follow him. It was Vlad Jr. In your estimation, from the entertainment side of things, is that okay for you? Do you like that maybe the winner isn't getting as much? I know he's getting some credit, but he's not getting all the attention. Do you kind of like that? Do you feel like in an age where MLB is struggling to try and get the viewership, trying to get their popularity back up, do you like how that storyline played out?
It was funny. It reminded me of the 2008 All-Star Game at Yankee Stadium, where I strategically sat in the upper deck in right field because I wanted to see balls go flying over my head, and that was Josh Hamilton. And Josh Hamilton didn't win the Home Run Derby. It was Justin Morneau who won in 2008. But the story was Josh Hamilton. So for me, you know, I think now with the advancements in technology, with the exit velocity and the launch angles and all of that stuff, the Home Run Derby has become a fan spectacle. And I don't think, you know, we put so much emphasis on who won or lost as if we were thoroughly entertained. And without question, we were thoroughly entertained. I think Pete Alonso has been the great story for the Mets, and probably the only good story for the Mets this year. And then we all anticipated Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be this extraordinary talent. And sure enough, and that was really great to see. And I think if you're a Blue Jays fan, you have a lot of great things to look forward to.
No doubt about that. That's going to be entertainment and great baseball to come in the future. Now let's kind of shift things here a little bit here, Wayne. Is the big bulk of why we wanted to chat here today was really to dive into the Miami Marlins. You have been really indoctrinated with the Marlins this year, and this is a team you documented a while back here. We got to take it month by month and kind of look at the progress, and I think that's what Derek Jeter is doing. And I think it's easy for people, especially the casual baseball fan, to go, well, Miami's in the basement. They're going to stay in the basement. Let's not care. But when you take a look, there's a lot of potential and a lot of excitement. And this team, yes, they're losing record. Yes, they've had their struggles. But this is a team that I think might surprise people here in the next 2 to 5 years.
I think so. The way I kind of look at the Miami Marlins at the present moment, and I've spent a lot of time looking at them since really essentially this past offseason up until the present moment, is I think they're a major work in progress. We're talking about a five-year plan here. We're probably essentially just getting to the end of the first year, because when you factor in the ownership change and all of that stuff. But I like them for a variety of reasons, particularly, and we'll get into it with the draft and everything, but the casual fan, to your point, they're going to look at a record that's sub 500. They're going to look at, hey, their last 29 games, they were 10-19. But I look at it from the perspective of, they were 13-5 from the middle of May to the early part of June, where they were showing glimpses of, hey, wait, you know, there's something here. Their starting pitching's been a very positive story in the first half of the season. They clearly have some talent there. So you have to really pick up the hood and really dig deep into this franchise to realize, hey, look, there are some interesting and intriguing parts here. And this could be something in the next 3 to 5 years that's definitely worth watching.
Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, joining here on The Long Ball. You can check out every episode on Twitter at TheLongBall1 and also at @abrown_13878. It'll be there, and it will be, again, a lot of great conversation as we're having right now. And speaking about more conversation here, Wayne, every trade deadline we see, and of course this year, we'll talk about it here in a bit, obviously a different scenario, just one, and you can't mess around this time. But you also, a lot of people obviously will look at, okay, who are the contenders? And rightfully so, who are the contenders, who's going to move where? But for a team like Miami, still building, still rebuilding, are there pieces that you see maybe moving off the table for Miami, or what's a trade deadline going to be looking for a team like Miami?
I think right off the bat, the way I would look at it, the way I have looked at it, you're going to look at contracts, and you're going to look at, when does that player hit free agency? And the Marlins have about four or five interesting players. And I'll start with Martin Prado, Curtis Granderson, Neil Walker, Sergio Romo, and Miguel Rojas. I would say if the Marlins do anything, it's going to happen with one of those type of players. Particularly, I think Starlin Castro is going to be the one. And the reason why I say that is because he has a player option for 2020 for $16 million with a $1 million buyout. And you know the Marlins are not going to pick up a $16 million deal. I think the bigger question for the Marlins right now, because I think Castro is the likely focal point over the next couple of weeks, is that do the Marlins find a potential contender who is looking for an infielder who can play second and shortstop with some veteran experience and in an environment that might recharge his batteries, because Castro is not having what you would say a particularly good season. Maybe changes in a competitive environment might kind of ignite a spark. But I think the big question is, if the Marlins don't find a potential contender to work out a trade for Castro, do they actually release him, eat the $5 million left on his deal for the year, and bring up a AAA ball player like Easton Diaz to play second base? So I think there's a lot of interesting things that the Marlins can do. But don't expect to get a lot of big pieces in return, because you're really talking about aging veterans who really are used for key specific contending ball clubs. And you're not going to get like a Christian Yelich trade back here. We're not going to get a trade where you're going to get Jordan Yamamoto or Lewis Brinson or Monte Harrison or players like that. You might get a nice piece here or there, and you might get some salary relief, but you're not going to get the big bulk back. This isn't like the Marlins having Madison Bumgarner or Marcus Stroman right now, where there's going to be a significant return on it. So this might be let's just kind of get rid of some veteran ball players and let's see if we can get some serviceable ball players in return, because a lot of the Marlins roster is pre-salary arbitration eligible ball players right now.
Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. You know, I really love the analysis on Castro, and I think I agree with you there. He's going to be the most looked at piece. One interesting part too is I know over the last couple of years, Martin Prado there was a lot of talk about him possibly moving, but there is so much. It seemed like there were so many negatives that teams didn't want to look at, that maybe injury scares, maybe other things would occur. From his vantage point, what is his value at right now? How do you determine that, or what do you determine his value to be in terms of potential trade moves? Where do you see him? Where do you see his status within the organization? And does he have enough value, I guess I should ask, to warrant a trade?
Well, he's injured right now. He's on the IL with a right hamstring injury. So this is probably the worst of timing for this to happen. So, you know, I think if I had to look at the Marlins right now in terms of which players I think are likely to move or have some type of attractive value based on health and performance right now, Starlin Castro is clearly ahead of the list. Don't sell out Miguel Rojas. He's attractive because he's going to go into year three of arbitration eligibility, so there's another year of control there. So you might be able to catch lightning in a bottle with a player like that. I never sell a Curtis Granderson or a Neil Walker short. They could be guys that can come in for a couple of weeks and, you know, to a team that has a starter that's injured, and they can kind of keep it going. But I think the jury really is still out on Prado just for the fact that he's not healthy just yet. So it's very hard to put a determination on that. I mean, we might not see him until next week after, you know, because the break is ending. And, you know, you're really essentially dealing with 2 weeks. Can he put himself in a position within 2 weeks that he is attractive to a team like, say, the Twins or, you know, the Athletics or teams like that that will be competing for postseason berths, particularly in the American League, so to speak?
Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. And one last thing here as we go through the trade deadline sort of things. From the vantage point of Major League Baseball here, we've always had the post-July 31st trade deadline, and that's always brought up interesting scenarios. But now, how much does this simplify things to you, and what's the strategy like that you're going to see from teams all across the country and all across the MLB?
I think it simplifies it, but it also intensifies it at the same time, because I think the second wild card, since the advent of that has changed the playing field, that teams are in it a little bit longer. But I think now that we're dealing with July 31st as that hard and fast deadline, now teams are going to have to make a decision quicker. Are we buyers or sellers? Rather than say, okay, we have a loose deadline, then we have the month of August to kind of figure things out. I think you're going to see a lot of teams be more buyers than sellers because of this deadline. And knowing that, hey, look, if we're going to be in it, we're going to be in it. So I definitely see that. That combination, the second wild card, is really going to change a lot of teams' perceptions, because they're not going to have the early part of August kind of still figure things out. They're going to have to figure things out right now. So if coming back from the All-Star break, teams are going to have to make that decision. We're in it, we're not in it. And I think if you're a team such as in the National League Central, everyone's still in it. And even if you're in last place, you're still in that division. And how do you go about making the best move for your franchise? How do you go about making the best move to get you in second or even first wild cards and possibly even win the division? So a lot of teams are going to probably be buyers rather than sellers because of the second wild card and because of how certain divisions in baseball are very close. You know, NL West is probably out of this conversation. I think that's out of it. I think the AL East is heading in that direction. But I think a lot of the fun is going to be seeing teams, whether the Cubs, the Brewers, the Pirates, the Reds, Cardinals, what are they going to do in terms of deals over the next couple of weeks to really separate themselves among a very crowded pack?
Wayne McDonald Jr., baseball extraordinaire, joining us. He works for Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. A great friend of the show, and we continue on talking with him. And, you know, Wayne, we'll get into kind of the prospect watch for the Miami Marlins here in just a bit. I want to first give a shout-out here. You and I very well know Jeff Turn, Jerry Pelleschi at down in Sioux Falls at ESPN 99.1. They want to say hi, and they want us to give a shout-out to you and say thank you. So it's the moment I mentioned this to them, they said, yes, let us listen in.
Those are two gentlemen I think very high of, and two other great guys I love talking baseball with. You know, I go back some time with Jeff, and every time we talk, it's a great baseball conversation, just like you and I have, Andrew. So I think the world of those two guys.
No doubt, and it's great. And now we'll kind of just pivot a little bit and go to the San Diego Padres. Now, for me, this again, it's an intriguing team. They've had obviously Manny Machado, him signing in there, and of course they've had some prospects come up, and their pitching has been stronger. Pitching prospects have come up strong in the majors now, and it's a team that still is slated that to be on a 5-year plan or so. I mean, they're still kind of that long term plan out. But in their scenario, are they kind of going to sit in place? I know people keep talking about they may make a move, but is it right for them to make any moves at the trade line as buyers, or what's their situation like for you?
See, that's a great question, because the way I look at the NL West right now, the Dodgers have run away with it, and I don't think the Dodgers are going to sit pat either. I think they're going to go and add, you know. So I think the Dodgers still have the bad taste in their mouths in the past couple of postseasons and World Series appearances, and they have a lot of unfinished business. And you know, Dave Roberts has really done a fantastic job with the Dodgers. I think I kind of look at the Padres as more of a 3-year project more than a 5-year. I think the Marlins are a solid 5-year, where I think in the case of the Padres, I think they're closer than people will give them credit for, because they do have a really strong farm system. You know, I don't think Machado would have signed there if he had to go through, you know, half of his decade-long contract being a rebuild. So, you know, I think they're at a position where if the deal makes sense for them and there is a significant return on investment that can help bolster them, I could see them doing something. But if it's a deal for the sake of doing a deal and being a seller, I would really stay away. I would kind of encourage them really to look at what they have and does the deal make sense for them. Whereas teams like the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Braves, the Phillies, you know, Brewers, those 5 or 6 teams in the National League, they're going to have to make moves, you know, just to really, really keep up with the Dodgers. So with the Padres, I really look at them more of a 3 years away rather than 5 years away. And is the deal make sense for them? You know, I would not want to see them deal away prospects where 2 years from now they say, wow, you know, we should have done that. Because how many deals have we seen where prospects have flourished in the markets? So I do believe that they're a heck of a lot closer to being a competitive team than what we might say on paper right now.
Wayne McDonald Jr., Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. We'll get into now, we'll dive into back into the Miami Marlins here. And, you know, it was interesting because I felt in my bones here, Wayne, that there may be something coming up from you here in the next few weeks. And I thought I had to jump on it and talk some of the guys who are coming up, because I saw the Futures game. I saw Sixto Sanchez. And I thought he was great before. I really, you know, you talked highly of him, and I really see what people see in him. But again, what you said, there's a litany of players, and we'll kind of dive into some individuals here. But man, looking at who they have in the pipeline, again, come 5, maybe 6, 7 years down the road, I think that they're doing it right, and I think at some point we may see a really big contending team, and I think it has a lot to do with who's coming up.
Well, it's funny. When I think of the Marlins, and, there's not a real big appetite for Miami Marlins baseball out there on the national level these days, and I totally understand that. But I view them in the same manner as I do the Cubs from a number of years ago. If you have a chance, Tom Verducci's book, The Cubs Way, is a great read, and I read that book, after the 2016 World Series, Cubs World Series, and all this stuff, and it dawned on me that was a blueprint towards building a winner. It was a 5-year plan. Well, the Marlins are doing that right now themselves. They have a blueprint. They have a 5-year plan in place. No one likes to go through the losing seasons. No one likes to be playing in front of 7,000-8,000 fans in a ballpark that holds 30,000 fans, and we all know the problems in the state of Florida with the game of Major League Baseball. Be that as it may, you got to look at what the Marlins have, and what they're doing is they're building nicely. They have drafted well, and now we have to just wait and see. And I think a lot of pressure was put on the Marlins for this draft to be very important for them, building towards the future. Some have even gone out and said it's they were the big winners of the draft. My opinion, how do you know? You won't know for a number of years. And in truth, we really won't know until, let's say, because it's Friday, July 12th, we won't know until 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time who they signed. So we really can't even judge who's in their system from this draft until that is over with. And I think that's a big thing. And on paper right now, before everything is signed, they did very well for themselves. But we just don't know how this talent is going to go through. And we can go through different ways in terms of how you would evaluate it.
Wayne McDonald Jr., Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. And talking about signing, we have had a recent signing for the Marlins. J.J. Bleda, the power hitter for Vanderbilt, led the nation in home runs, was a phenomenal threat in the batter's box. He signed, and I think that may be why a lot of people have deemed, and I'm with you there, I don't necessarily like winners and losers until we can prove it, until it's proven, but I think that a lot of that hype had to do with J.J. Bleda signing, him getting drafted, now he's signed. How big is that for the Marlins here, and where do you see his path going from now? I mean, how much potential and how fast could this guy possibly move up the ranks?
See, it's interesting because the Marlins did something very unique this year that they haven't done in a very long time. They really went out and they drafted 33 players drafted by the Marlins this year were either junior college or four-year players, with only 7 being high school players. And if you look at their top 6 picks, I'm going to include the competitive balance A pick in there, Cameron Misner, who hasn't signed yet. They're essentially, really, there's a heavy emphasis on college ball players. So with a guy like Bleda, I look at him. He has signed. I don't think the ink is yet dry on that contract just yet. And we're hearing a signing bonus above slot, just slightly above slot, at about $6.67 million. I think the Marlins, try to take it as easy as they possibly can with him because he's had a long college season. But I think they expect a guy like him and Misner and, Peyton Burdick, these college boys, Evan Edwards, these college ball players that they drafted, within the next 2 years or something to really see to have an impact. I think that's why they really had a mantra. They want athletic ball players. They really liked college ball players in this particular draft. And they're looking for a quick bounce from these players. Now, the interesting thing that they did with their second round pick, they got Nazim Nunez, who is basically, he's all glove, not really a bat just yet. it probably will develop into minor leagues, but they also paid him well above slot. The slot was about $1.62 million. They signed him for $2.2 million. So this is their third overall pick behind Blade and Misner, who are, you know, big-time college baseball players. They went for a high school shortstop without really not knowing what his bat is going to be. So I think they made a heavy emphasis, because they actually have some strong pitching in this system, to get outfielders, and they were about a certain size, 6'3", 220-pound outfielders is really what the Marlins were looking for. And I think, you know, in the next couple of weeks when we start to sit down and look at the draft, they've added some real nice parts to a blueprint that's moving in the right direction.
Wayne McDonald Jr., Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, joining the long ball with Andrew Brown. And one thing that I was very interested in, I'm always interested in, and Wayne, you know, I'm also a big college baseball fan, and I love seeing how people come up through the ranks, come up through college, come up through the minor league system. And there's always the conversation of, you know, whether you go ball at high school level or you go to the collegiate level. And obviously, and let's exclude the top tier talent, like, you know, Hunter Green for last year, for example. When if you're going to get a first round pick, go for it. But in terms of teams and their drafting, we've seen this a couple times where teams have gone and wanted the more experience, wanted all of that. And Houston did that a little bit in their rebuild. Now, of course, we see the Marlins doing, as you mentioned, a lot of that. Do you potentially see kind of a shift? I know people get happy about the high school prospects, but do you see maybe a shift of going one way or another towards more collegiate stars? Is that more kind of the mindset that teams are going to? Or is it just kind of right now, is that just mainly what the Miami Marlins are thinking?
Well, it's interesting because if you look at, you know, the top picks this year, the top five picks, three of them were college ball players. You know, and they were elite college ball players. And I think, you know, it depends upon the franchise and depend upon the organizational structure. You know, the Royals didn't have a problem with Bobby Witt Jr. with the second overall pick, and he's talking about a high school kid. You know, I think that philosophy changes as quickly as many people change their socks, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. I think it's talent-driven. I think it's signability. I also think if a franchise has built a very strong infrastructure and there's a level of maturity as well. We have seen immensely talented kids get drafted, but they weren't mature enough to handle the rigorous grinds that is minor league baseball. We've been caught up in the NBA and the NFL, you know, trade deadlines, and especially the NBA Fast and Furious signing period for the past week or so, and seeing more trades. These guys go directly to professional sports. In baseball, you know, they're going to minor league towns across the United States, and they might not see the light of day for 3-5 years in some cases. And if you don't have a franchise with a rock solid infrastructure that can support these ball players, you know, it can be a serious challenge. So for me, if, you know, I get a kick out of the draft when they do comparisons. Oh, this guy's going to be the next Frank Thomas. This guy's going to be the next Clayton Kershaw. How do you know? And we have to be very careful by putting that pressure on players. And then on the flip side of it, too, if you know, you watch the draft and you follow college baseball, there's so many negativities put on these players too. You know, really can't hit the inside fastball, can't hit the breaking ball, you know, not a real quick first step in the outfield. So these guys are constantly scrutinized. That's why I think it goes by the talent, it goes by the organization's philosophy and infrastructure, because some are far better than others. And most importantly, it goes by the ball players' passion, talents, and abilities to realize, hey, it's going to be a grind, and there's going to be some significant challenges. And it doesn't matter if you're Derek Jeter, who is, you know, the boss of the Marlins, or if you're Brian Cashman, basically running the Yankees. you're gonna have to deal with these things. And a guy like Gina can make it a heck of a lot easier because he went through all those struggles. You know, he struggled and he suffered and had those feelings where, you know, it's important to have that infrastructure and tell them it's going to be okay, you know, and go through it.
All right, so now, Wayne, as we continue on a little deeper into the kind of the inner workings with some of these youngsters, these young stars of tomorrow, I got to ask, you know, I saw Sixto Sanchez again in the Futures game. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to really dive into him a whole lot, but, I mean, you've heard the buzz. You hear what's going around. What's the ceiling on this guy, and is he the guy that, you know, we've seen him have his ups and downs, but is he the guy that can really take this team in the future on a pitching-wise?
I think he's the guy that is going to be a lot of emphasis on him with the future for the simple fact that they traded JT Realmuto to get him, and that was a late off-season deal. He is the number one prospect in the Marlins organization at the present moment. Lighting up AA as we speak. As we talked earlier, he did a great job in the Futures game. So I think we're talking about someone who's going to be part of the meeting. Hey, don't be surprised to see him on the season, maybe 2021 at the latest. The Marlins are really thinking 2020, 2021. They're thinking immediate future. I think they're very careful with him because he's a few months, and there's going to be more of a heavy emphasis on his health, his overall well-being, and where he fits into a pretty crowded situation for the Marlins at the present moment.
Once again, everybody, Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Winding out the questions here just a little bit. One interesting thing, Wayne, that I saw initially from you, kind of when things broke, we saw the Mesa brothers, Victor Mesa Jr., and of course Victor Mesa himself. We saw them be very highly international picked. I mean, the Marlins went after them pretty heavy. What's the buzz around where they are projected, or what the Marlins are thinking about for them, and what do you see the ceiling like? Because there's been so much buzz. I think often we can look at things and get too wrapped up in the buzz or the hype and may not notice the reality behind it.
Victor Mesa right now is the third overall prospect in the Marlins system behind Sixto Sanchez and Monte Harrison. I think with Mesa to occur, and I think anything with the international ball players getting accustomed to the Major League Baseball and the minor leagues, and then kind of getting a feel. He just cracked the top 100 in terms of Major League Baseball top 100 minor league prospects. So I think he's a couple years away in terms of just trying to find out what he's all about. Because let's face it, this is all new to him. And we're only talking about him having, you know, what, 4 or 5 months of really competitive baseball at the minor league level under his belt. Well, it's a little bit of a different story. I think it's really comparing apples and oranges right now, where his brother's not the same level as he is in terms of a held in high regard as a prospect. But I think you got to look at Sanchez. You got to look at Mesa. You got to look at Monte Harrison. You got to look at those three right now as the prospects in the Marlins system. And hopefully by 2021, all three of them have impact on the day-to-day roster for the Marlins at the Major League level.
Wayne McDonald Jr., Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Last couple questions here, Wayne. First off, we talk, and now it almost seems like a disservice to not talk about all these guys, but of course, you know, we only have so much time. But is there anybody that other than who we've spoken about, is there anybody else that you may have your eyes on, or that maybe we, as even the casual fans, should really pay attention to? Mainly because, and I ask this from the standpoint of, you know, we see guys like, say, Jordan Springer right now. You know, back in the day, he was looked differently. When you're a prospect, you're looked differently, and it's I think it's important to know who may be the big stars or who has a potential to be that way. Is there anybody else that kind of jumps off your radar that say, hey, be on the lookout for this guy?
See, for me, and with regard to the Marlins, when we look at those guys, an interesting name is going to be Eason Diaz. He's currently playing second base at the AAA level for the in New Orleans. He's a guy that's going to be very interesting because he could be the replacement for Starlin Castro. I would say it wouldn't surprise me if they move Castro, that by the end of the season, he might have some major league games under his belt. So he could be an intriguing player for me. But when I think of the Marlins and I look at the next 3 to 5 years, I think of the ball players that they got for Christian Yelich, Miguel Ozuna, and for JT Realmuto. They're going to have 3 or 4 of those prospects that they got from those deals really strike it rich. And I think the Yelich deal is going to be the one that can actually produce something, because if you look at it from a perspective of, you know, Monte Harrison, Jordan Yamamoto, Eason Diaz, they came directly from the Yelich deal. So those could be like the 3 guys that can really make a difference, to the standpoint that Marlins fans are never going to forget Christian Yelich, because he started to hit his peak performance in prime with a franchise-friendly contract, and he got moved to the Brewers. And then we all know what's happening right now, where he's in the battle right now. Not only has he won an MVP award, but he could win another this year. He's in the battle for the Triple Crown in the National League. So I think for this to work for the Miami Marlins over the next 5 years, they're going to have to hit big with some of these prospects that they got in these trades. And I think the focal trade will always be the Yelich trade. And if those guys don't turn out to do anything positive with the franchise for 5 years, that can go down as one of the most lopsided deals, which I don't think it's going to. I think there's a lot of talent that can turn, but none of it is at the caliber of Christian Yelich.
Wayne McDonald Jr., Forbes, SportsMoney, Forbes.com. Wayne, gonna wrap up things with this now. Again, I got the itchy feeling I needed to talk with you. You have something that's coming up yet. You're still doing stuff, so can't give out too much. But what are you looking for most out of, you know, getting when you get ready for the deadline? What are some of the other big things that you may be looking at, and what should we be looking for coming out of your next work?
Well, over the next 2 weeks, so you have a deadline, all 30 major league ball clubs, so please check it out. We got some great baseball players there. We know their stuff. And I'm going to be doing some quick summaries on what the Marlins spent over now that Blade looks like he's going to be done. So as we get to the trading deadline, but I think not just stay paddle, they move forward. And who's going to separate themselves in the next? Arguably the most fascinating division.
Well, no doubt about that. That, you know, it's really going to be fun here, Wayne, to see. It's always so fun and it's always so intriguing because things happen, things can happen on a dime so late. There's so much intrigue and so much excitement surrounding it. It'll be very fun. And again, everybody, check out the great work of everybody at Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com, especially Wayne McDonald Jr. He keeps you informed. He keeps you going. He gets you in the know with especially what's going on with the Miami Marlins. Wayne, it's been a pleasure to talk to you every time. I mean, man, it's been, 45 minutes, and it seems like it's been 5. I mean, we could talk for days on it. You're a great baseball mind, and always glad to have you on the show. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, once again, that was the one, the only, Wayne McDonald Jr., contributing writer to Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com. Great conversation with the great baseball mind. And again, don't sleep on the Miami Marlins. At some point here in the future, they will be a relevant team, and they will have pretty much covered what the Houston Astro model is, and then some. There's a lot of great things going on in that organization,
and Derek Jeter and company doing it the right way. And, of course, you heard all of it, the in-depth analysis and more from Wayne himself. If you want even more, make sure to check out Forbes Sports Money, ForbesSportsMoney.com. Search Wayne McDonald Jr., find all of his great works and then some, and, of course, a lot more. There's a lot more great individuals within the Forbes Sports Money, Forbes.com department, so please check out all their great works. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will bid you adieu for this one. That's right. Unfortunately, I have to say sayonara. Please give this a like and a shout out. We'll have this on Twitter at TheLongBall1 and at @abrown_13878. We'll have this on Stitcher, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, Apple, iTunes, and more. So many different ways to catch up on The Long Ball and get your fix. Once again, a big reminder for next week, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about StatCast and how much it was used in the MLB All-Star Game and what we can expect moving forward and how StatCast will truly change the game of baseball. That's coming up next week, and hope you have a great one, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening in. Once again, you've been listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown, and as they say in the showbiz world, until next time, stay safe.